All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA, Step Back, and FanRag Sports. And I write for the Miami Heat's Tip Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Rubel, a credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat for SB Nation and AllYouCanEat.com. I cover the league at large for FanSide and FanRag Sports. You can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRubel13.
Today we are continuing with part two of our roster rundown, in which for the entire episode we will check in on every player on the Heat's 15-man roster. We'll do these typically when we have an unusual amount of time between games, like now between the All-Star break and when, you know, the post-All-Star break schedule starts. This is usually a good opportunity to review the roster. It's not unlike what the coaches will do in the middle of the season as well. We discussed the Heat's ball handlers and wings in part one. That went up yesterday. Today we'll be focusing on the front court, right? The forwards and the centers. So let's start there with James Johnson. This has been a big year for James Johnson, new contract, blah blah blah. And he was a major part of the Heat's success because he was playing well. It seems to be a direct correlation between games in which James Johnson plays well and Miami wins. And that's going to be big for him. Look, he was in a slump. He's recently starting to come out of it, specifically on offense. And I think that for him in these next 20 plus games is going to be the main thing for James Johnson, is just sort of sustaining the type of offense and just the numbers that he's been able to put up, because he's one of those guys. We talked a lot about this in part one, about guys just putting points on the board and Miami being able to sort of just hang their hat on that on a game to game basis. James Johnson was one of those guys for the Heat last season where he was just able to put up 10 plus points a game, and it wasn't a question whether or not he'd do that. He needs to get back to that level, I think, in the second half.
It's been a weird year for James. Like, I feel like a lot of Heat fans and Heat Twitter have been negative about his performances because there have been particularly egregious and you know, scary moments there where he's, you know, looked disengaged or had forced a turnover. You know, particularly, I think, earlier in the season when he looked a little uncomfortable with the rhythm as a starter, he was making some pretty bad passes. But, you know, that's been here and there. I honestly think that's just part of the game. And we were willing to overlook that last season because, well, the expectations were a lot lower. It was just James Johnson. I remember, you know, the segment we used to have, the power forward belt that we've discontinued. you know, and it was like, you know, pick your poison, because between him, Derek Williams, and Luke Babbitt, you really didn't have many options. So for James Johnson to get his 12 points as a reserve last year was like, well, he kind of gets the power forward belt because nobody else has really done enough to warrant getting it. But, you know, he just needs to continue to play a little bit more efficient. And unfortunately for him, and one of the things that I think fans tend to overlook, is that he's such an emotional player. He needs to have that kind of fire and that kind of drive of being overlooked and having been a career journeyman. He needs to have that push him. And I think that's what's really going to help sustain him during the next 20-something games of the season, is that he has to understand what's at stake here. Like, this team cannot afford to miss the playoffs, so he needs to push himself beyond anything he's done over the first 60 games in order to get us to that next level.
You know, and that new contract creates a new expectation. And I don't think – and the players aren't immune to that. Look, they'll talk about it all the time. Oh, you know, it doesn't matter how much I make. I'm just going to play my game. That's a load of crap. Like, we know that's a load of crap because it's human nature. Like, hey, I'm making X amount of dollars now. I'm making, you know, $14 million compared to making $1 million last year. There, and you feel like you have to live up to that. I mean, Tyler Johnson at least has been really open about that. Yeah. And I think James Johnson, to a certain respect, has mentioned it here and there. But there comes that expectation. But you compound that with also Deion Waiters trying to do the same thing at the start of the season. Tyler Johnson trying to do the same thing, even though he inked that contract a couple summers ago. You've got a lot of guys who signed new deals that are also trying to live up to those expectations. And there's, again, I hate to say this, but there's only one basketball, you know, and that sort of becomes a factor at some point. And then also for James, you already mentioned this, but like, he came off the bench every game last season, almost every game until the end when he had to start, I think, against Charlotte because of injuries, and he started playing a little bit more.
Yeah.
But for most of the season, he was coming off of the bench, and they asked him to be a starter at the beginning of the season this year. That's a different dynamic. And we've heard him even say, like, he prefers to come off the bench because he likes that rhythm a little bit more.
Yeah.
But Miami, just frankly, they need somebody like James Johnson to start next to Hassan Whiteside. So I wonder how much of that back and forth between the bench and the starting unit and just Spoelstra being unable, because mostly because of injuries, unable to settle in on a starting unit, how that sort of impacted his inconsistency. But regardless, like if you're getting, like, not to go back to the money thing, but if you're getting paid the way he's getting paid, and the reason he's getting paid that is because Miami has certain expectations for him. And if they have those expectations for him, he needs to be a little bit more consistent, whether or not he's coming off the bench or starting. I don't care. I don't care if your bench guy is making $14 million. I don't care about that. What I care about is the consistency, making the most of whichever role you're playing. And that's what James has to do.
Yeah.
Let's move on to Luke Babbitt, who knows what role he's playing. He was playing a backup small forward in Miami's last game against Philadelphia, which is the first time he logged minutes for the Heat since coming back over from Atlanta at the trade deadline. And going into the trade deadline, I was all on board of let's go get Marco Bellinelli from Atlanta.
Yeah.
Miami instead got Luke Babbitt, and I think he can fill a similar role. Look, we talked a lot about on part one of this. Wayne Ellington is Mr. Fourth Quarter for the Heat. He is the guy that they look to in the fourth quarter for better or worse, usually for worse. We'd prefer that not be the case, that they could diversify their offensive portfolio a little bit more. But that's what Luke Babbitt could help do is, hey, if Ellington's three-pointer is not going in, maybe Babbitt can get going a little bit here, and hopefully he can add some like maybe break in case of emergency type scoring for them.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to have to play, very spot minutes, and he's going to have to make the most of those. And that's difficult, but I mean, to be honest with you, this is the player he's been throughout his career. Whether it was in Portland or New Orleans, he came in there whenever he did, shot threes, and kind of sat on the bench. And, there's not much else that he can do. He's not an aggressive defender. He's not a playmaker of any sorts. He's a catch-and-shoot guy. So Spoelstra's work is cut out for him, and that he has to figure out how to kind of bridge the gap between the starting units and the reserve group and where to fit Luke in there, because he needs to be able to – well, he just – quite honestly, he can help Miami's offense. And, when they're struggling for points – the other four players, whoever surround Babbitt in those kinds of lineups, have to be a little bit more aggressive in driving the hoop. I could see some of those aggressive lineups, let's say a combination of Tyler Johnson and Dwayne Wade driving to the hoop and then finding a wide open Ellington and Luke Babbitt on the perimeter. I think that would work really well for Miami's offense, where they'd be able to space the floor. And then defenders would have to pick their poison. They either have to chase Ellington around four screens, or they'd have to cover Luke Babbitt, as they most often do. And then he can knock down that wide open three-pointer. So it's a conundrum for Spoelstra, but I'm trust that he'll be able to figure out something that works well for Luke.
Especially considering that the guy they shipped off for Luke Babbitt was Okero White, who wasn't playing the season, mostly because of injury. But you just get one other guy who's on that bench that you can go to in emergency situations. And you're right, that's what Babbitt's role is probably going to be here, spot minutes. We're going to move on to a trio of combo forward / centers. That's right, a trio of them. You might be wondering who the third one is. But before we do that, quick announcement that in addition to hosting Locked On Heat on a daily basis, Dave and I will be hosting Locked On NBA every Tuesday for the rest of the season, talking about the biggest games and the biggest storylines from across the league.
Maybe a lot of our listeners don't know this, but the reason why Wes and I have this podcast is because we're writers at heart. We've been credentialed to cover the league for a number of years now. We've been in locker rooms across the NBA and talked to players and coaches from across the league. But we get to bring those stories now to our podcast, our weekly podcast, and we're excited about this opportunity, and we hope you will be too. Listen in on our conversations, enjoy them, and find out about the other teams in the league.
Locked On NBA is revamping its format. That's why this is all happening. We'll be hosting every Tuesday, while the original host, David Locke, and other Locked On Podcast Network hosts will be taking over the other days of the week.
Do yourself a favor. Trust me when I say this, it's worth a listen. Subscribe to Locked On NBA on iTunes or on your favorite podcasting app.
We're going to end part two of our roster rundown by complaining about Hassan Whiteside. I promise that's coming up. But before we get to that, we've got to talk about a guy that we don't complain about a lot, and that's Kelly Olynyk. The only knock against him right now is that he's not healthy. And so I think for Kelly Olynyk going into these next 20-plus games, his main thing is, all right, let's get this guy back and incorporate him back into the offense, however that might be, whether or not he's starting at the four, coming off the bench. I know, David, you prefer that he comes off the bench. One interesting thing to sort of, we'll talk about the bonus a little bit later, but let's talk about what his role is going to be going forward and just getting this guy back.
Wow, his role. Well, to be honest with you, he just we've come to rely on him for a lot. Like when our offense gets stagnant, part of what makes it seem much more fluid is when Olenek's game is really, really locked in. He can do so much because he can drive aggressively to the hoop. He's got that bag of tricks that never seems to end, really. You know, he's got so many different savvy moves to get to the hoop. He's not the most athletic guy. He's not the most powerful by any stretch of the imagination. But somehow, if he's within a few feet of the rim, he'll fake a couple guys out and create an easy shot for himself. He can do so from the perimeter as well. And then, his perimeter shooting, quite frankly, has been spectacular. With the exception of Wayne Ellington, he's probably been Miami's best shooter by a long stretch. And Miami needs that. And without him there, you've seen the struggles offensively over the last few games. So it's too bad that we've come to rely on a guy like Kelly Olynyk. We never thought that that would be the case, but this is the way this team is comprised. It's many, many role players that are all required to chip in on a nightly basis. If one of them falters, you can start to see those glaring holes in Miami's scheme.
And I think the reason that the Heat rely so much on Olynyk is not only what he could do as far as just putting points on the board and just spacing the floor, but it's those other the little things that he does. I mean, just the way he moves the ball, makes the right reads, can facilitate from the elbow and does all the dribble handoffs. And of course, you get those highlights of the fake dribble handoffs that lead to dunks, right? And those are always great. But it is, and it's something that the other Heat players that are involved in those dribble handoffs are starting to steal. I don't know if you noticed this, but James Johnson has tried to steal that move a little bit a couple times here. But, those are those little things. And that's why the Heat rely on him so much, because even if he's not scoring, right? Like if his shot is off, he brings so many other things to the table. And defensively, he's been really good for Miami. Better than I think they expected him to be. He's a good team defender. He's not the one-on-one defender that even Bam Adebayo is, but he's a good team defender. He's never going to butcher a defense so bad that it ends up in a wide open layup. Is he going to get crossed over? Yeah, he'll get crossed over every once in a while, and that might lead to a wide open layup, but it's not going to be a mental mistake. He's usually in the right place and will do the most of what he can do. And in the same way of Wayne Ellington, right? Like Wayne Ellington doesn't do all of the versatile things that Olynyk does, but just his floor spacing is similar to that of Kelly Olynyk's, where even if they're not shooting at a high clip, defenses still have to respect it. So it just helps the offense overall. But now the interesting little wrinkle here for Olynyk is obviously he's trying to get back to playing on the court, and he's got that $1 million bonus that he makes if he plays 1,700 minutes this season. Right now he's at 1,264 minutes, so about 400 minutes short. And so he's going to need to play 18 games at the current minutes per game that he's getting in order to make that $1 million bonus. He's mentioned though that that's not a major priority for him, right?
Yeah. It's he did say that he's not thinking about it. He's already collecting the 10 point something million that he's getting for his regular contract. The bonus was worked in there just to sweeten the deal a little bit. The 1700 minute mark might seem a little random, but it's above what he averaged when he was in Boston. His previous high was somewhere in the 1500 plus range. So, it's a good goal for him because, he wasn't always a starter. He wasn't a starter in Boston. And so his minutes have kind of been up and down because you never really knew if he was going to be able to play at a consistent level. But I think he's warranted. He'll probably reach that mark, and that's fine. But it depends on when he comes back. We haven't got any updates about his shoulder injury. We've seen him shooting around American Airlines Arena. So hopefully he's back and ready to play against New Orleans on Friday.
Yeah, he'll be a major component of the Heat's playoff push here. And he's averaging about 24 minutes per game. And should note, that $1 million bonus is already factored into Miami's cap. They don't have to – if he makes $1 million, it's not going to affect the cap situation at all. Right. Let's move on to Bam Adebayo, who has also played a little bit of 4 and 5 this season, just like Kelly Olynyk has. I think the main story for him going forward, if you're Eric Spoelstra, you're sitting back, you're looking at this roster right now, and you're trying to determine, okay, which guys am I going to play? What lineups am I going to incorporate? Do I want to keep playing Bam Adebayo next to Hassan Whiteside? That's going to be a question that he needs to figure out. My argument is no, let's not do that. It has not been good. Miami's problem is not defense or top 10 defense in the league. Even without Bam playing next to Whiteside, I don't know if you noticed, but like Eric and Tony really love them playing together because I think they're a little old school and they like the rebounding factor it has. But I'm thinking about Lonzo Mourning and
PJ Brown working alongside each other.
Yeah, I'm anti rebounds. I don't care about rebounds whatsoever. But look, from Bam, more development, more minutes to go along with that development. And playing him next to guys like Dwayne Wade and Justice Winslow and Roddy McGruder when he gets back and Luke Babbitt, and just seeing like, okay, what can we do with Bam? We talked about this in part one of this roster rundown, Miami trying to find easier offense by creating more turnovers on defense. I think Bam Adebayo could play a major factor in doing that. He's so much more athletic than Whiteside is. He can get into those passing lanes, and moreover, he allows guys in the backcourt like Richardson and Winslow specifically to get into those passing lanes because he can help on their guys by coming out on the perimeter, something that Whiteside doesn't do effectively and that Olynyk just can't do as effectively as Bam just because of the difference in athleticism there. We know Bam slides his feet really well. That's why the Heat drafted him. One of the reasons why the Heat drafted him is that he can move along the perimeter defensively so well. I'd be interested to see more of that in the second half.
You might find it's hard to believe, but I'm actually going to disagree with you on this. I don't know that more minutes is the key for Bam at this point. I think, again, like I said earlier, if the goal for this team and the goal is to make the playoffs, that time for experimentation is over. You had 50-something games already to kind of figure out, to play around and see where he works best. It's about creating roles and having everybody stick to them and maximizing their time when they're playing those roles. And for Bam, I could see him being part of a closing lineup because of his range and athleticism. That's fine. I don't mind that. I prefer that to having Whiteside out there who's limited in what he can do defensively, and that's fine. And that's what needs to be clear. Part of the problem and part of what makes good coaches is the level of honesty and communication that they have with their players. And I think Spoelstra hasn't necessarily done that with Whiteside. He needs to sit him down and say, listen, I love you. You're great. I'm an old school coach at heart, and I'd love having a rim protector out there. But the reality is that in today's league, with 3-point shooting being what it is and the diversity of offenses around the league, you can't play in the closing minutes of games. There are too many small ball lineups that can shoot the floor from all five positions where you're going to be out there as a liability. You're not going to be part of the closing lineup. And that's it. End of story. And whether Hassan takes it hard or not, that's up to him. You know, that's going to be up to him to, or, you know, if he's willing to accept it, reflecting poorly on him. And to have Adebayo out there for those closing minutes, I think works best for the Heat. As far as Bam's,
go ahead. Well, I want to ask you a question. Do you think that that's going to be something Spoelstra is going to be able to find as his closing lineup? I mean, obviously the whole Dwayne Wade situation adds a wrinkle to it. But what would be Miami's best closing lineup? I'm with you, and I don't want to harp too much on the more minutes, and that's probably my mistake. I don't really care about the minutes so much as just, you're right, finding that role. And I think he should be closing, and that conversation needs to be had. Because Bam Adebayo, like, the successful teams in this league go small, and it's because they have the players that can help them go small and still defend at a high level. Bam is one of those guys. I mean, if nothing else, he allows Miami to go quote unquote small at the end of games because he's able to switch so many things.
Yeah.
I wonder if Miami's closing lineup, let's get off track here for a little bit, but Goran Dragic, Dwayne Wade, Josh Richardson, James Johnson, Bam Adebayo. Is that the closing lineup? I mean, there's no Wayne Ellington there. I mean, maybe
I would substitute Wade. Yeah. I would put Ellington in there for Dragic, to be honest with you. And I know that feels like a knock on Goran. And it's tough. It's tough because as much as we appreciate what Goran does for Miami, I think he's rarely been the guy to take that last second shot. If you need 3-point shooting, you can get that from Richardson. You can get that from James Johnson. You can get that definitely from Wayne Ellington. So you need somebody who's going to be able to create plays for others. I still trust Wade to do that above Goran. I believe James Johnson and Richardson can handle that role as well. So I think that's the best closing lineup at this point, is Wade as your primary ball handler. Richardson, with his length and versatility, he can do things defensively. He can switch up. He can create offense in a number of ways. Ellington obviously is out there for his shooting. And Adebayo, again, defensively. And again, with his ability to attack boards. And that's one thing that he does incredibly better over Hassan Whiteside, is that he is aggressive in his rebounding. He could be there for putbacks in last second situations and clutch minutes. So, to me, that's the better closing lineup.
Yeah, it's probably not enough defense to play Dragic, Wade, Ellington, Richardson, and Bam. There's probably there's not enough defense on the floor there. I would even say playing Winslow over James Johnson could be an option, just because Winslow's better defensively. And would allow, I think, I kind of trust Winslow with the ball in his hands more than James Johnson at this point at the end of games. I think James Johnson has a tendency to do a little too much. And if you make Winslow the primary ball handler and allow, or I guess Wade in that situation, but allowing Jay Rich and either Dragic or Ellington, whoever else is in there, to play off the ball a little bit and creates a little bit more space. Let's talk about Jordan Mickey really quickly here. We don't need to spend a lot of time on him, but we do want to just sort of touch on every player because that's kind of the point here. I think for Mickey, and the main thing for him in the second half is just to be ready for in the occasion that Whiteside gets hurt again, or Bams gets injured, or Linux is not ready to get back to 100%. Just be ready and be ready to play a significant amount of minutes, or just spot minutes here and there. Whether or not it's at the four or the five, the Heat may need him at some point. And in these final 20 plus games, every game is going to matter for them. And as they make this postseason push, and they there might come a situation, a scenario where they rely on Mickey for some important minutes.
No, I don't think there will be.
Well, in the case of an injury or something like that, like it could happen,
no,
right?
I don't think Mickey, so. No. Even with Kelly Olynyk out, he hasn't played a second. I think between Whiteside, Johnson, Winslow, and Adebayo.
So wait, you're gonna tell Mickey to just go sit on a beach somewhere?
Like, I mean, he might as well, to be honest with you. He's the umbrella on your pina colada right now. He's not doing much of anything.
All right. Our final two players for our roster rundown are coming up next. But before we move on to the final segment, let's go to iTunes and see if we have any new reviews. David, do we?
No. we're stuck at 80. We've plateaued. Our listeners, we hear from you all the time when it comes to mailbag questions. We hear all the time on Twitter when you have complaints about games and comments and observations that we love to get. But we are counting on you to provide these reviews for us on iTunes. There's so much to the podcast. There's so much to other listeners that might not be aware that the podcast even exists.
So last I checked, we had the 80 reviews. We definitely have more than 80 people listening to this show. So let's try to get let's set a goal here. Let's try to get to 100. We did this before. I think we set a goal of trying to get 20 reviews in a month or something like that, and we hit it.
That seems right, yeah.
Let's do 20 more this month. So there's 7 days-ish to go, depending on when you listen to this. 7 days to go to get 20 more reviews. We could do that. That's doable. Let's get to 100 by the end of February. Let's do that.
Yeah, and we're not asking you to get your mom and your sister and your cousin's friends involved. But if that's
they
what
could it do
takes,
that,
that's fine. Yeah, that's fine. But we prefer if they were actually listening to the great content that we hope that we're producing for this podcast. But either way, try and support us however you can by subscribing, downloading, and of course, reviewing Locked On Heat on iTunes. That's the best way of supporting us. It increases our ranking, helps other Heat fans discover the show around the world. Our global following needs to pick up. Leave us a 5-star review, and you might get a shout out on the next episode.
It's time, David. I know you've been licking your chops over this. I know our listeners have just been eagerly awaiting for us to talk about Hassan Whiteside. But before we do that, let's talk about Udonis Haslem really quick. Let's get Haslem out of the way, because we know what Haslem is in these next 20 games, right? He is the coach on the bench. He is back with Dwayne Wade. He provides that emotional leadership. Is there anything else that we need to talk about with Udonis Haslem in these next 20 games?
No, I mean, but I think that should become clear. Like, I think if anybody's going to have Dwayne Wade's ear at this point, as much as we see Wade as taking a step as the mentor on this group, maybe being the veteran leader there for the first time perhaps in his career, I think Udonis can get in his ear and tell him, look, we need you to be this, because Miami's lacking something. They've let a number of close games slip away throughout the course of the season. They've lost 3 games before going into the All-Star break. They're not in a good place, I think, emotionally. They might be a little tired. They might be a little stretched, trying to figure out where their individual roles are. So I think for a guy like Haslem, he can do a lot behind the scenes, and he can really talk to everybody individually and get them to be fired up. I think that's where his best, most effective role is, and that's fine. It's not about what's on the court for UD. That's great. He can lead the team in a number of other ways.
He might have to do that with Hassan Whiteside here, because let's get into this, because – you know, you talked about this already, but Spoelstra at this break, right, post All-Star break now, he really does need to decide, okay, what is Whiteside's role on this team? Because I haven't been able to play this guy at the end of most games, and it's mostly just due to his type of style of play. It's not anything against Whiteside. It's just that kind of player doesn't play at end of games in today's NBA, and that's fine. Guys like Olynyk and Bam will play at the end of those games, but we didn't mention Olynyk in our closing lineup as an idea. We should talk about that, or just kind of throw that out there. When he's healthy, he should probably be involved in that situation. But, you know, Haslem might have to pull Whiteside aside and say, look, I get that you want to play more minutes. I get that, you know, you went out there and said before the All-Star break, Whiteside came out and said, like, one of his goals at the end of, after the All-Star break is to just play more minutes. And you've got to appreciate somebody wanting to be on the court like that. It's better than being like, I want to play fewer minutes, right? So it just can't be a distraction, I guess, is what I'm getting at here, is because with the main focus here is Miami making this final push for the postseason and getting a playoff seed in the Eastern Conference. And the players can't be walking on eggshells around Whiteside. Players can't be distracted by him wanting to play more minutes. If Whiteside wants to play more minutes, he's got to play to a level that forces the Heat to play him at the end of games, whether or not he's being dominant offensively or just shutting guys down defensively. He needs to get there. He can't complain his way to more minutes on the court. And he needs to stop, as media, I think you and I appreciate honesty from players. But as people covering the Heat and want them to get to the playoffs here, he needs to just sort of, maybe go on a complaining about minutes blackout restriction here and just really get in line with the team's main focus of making the playoffs.
I think, the thing is with Hassan is that you never know what his motivations are. And it's one thing to, on the surface, say his call for minutes is because he wants to be out there as much as possible, to be able to do as much as possible. But that also shows a lack of self-awareness. Like, he has to understand that his role, that his game is too limited in today's NBA, that he cannot be out there for longer than he's playing. Like, he's just not that player anymore. He might never have been, and he might never be. But at this point, there's only so much that you can ask of Hassan Whiteside in order for him to be a positive impact for your team. And any more minutes jeopardizes your ability to win. And I know it's tough because then you see the team losing anyway with him not closing minutes. And in his mind, his myopic view is that, well, if I was out there, maybe we could get that win. That's probably not the case. I don't think that's what is causing the Heat losses in clutch minutes. It's not because they don't have a rim protector out there. Maybe it's made an impact here and there. I have to look at that as to why they are. But I think it's mostly having these double-digit offensive deficits where they have to kind of come back from and then find a way to win in the closing minutes. Unfortunately, that hasn't always paid off. So with Whiteside and his motivation, he has to understand that if it's about the winning, it's about the team, then he shouldn't say anything. Like, at this point, he's already got his contract. What else does he want? Does he want the all-star accolade? Does he want the kind of production that justifies his salary? It's like, you're already getting paid. What else do you need? And I think that's the thing. It's like, look, we've never heard this about DeAndre Jordan. Like, maybe he's at a different point in his career and that he's established himself a lot longer. He's represented the United States in a gold medal match. He's done a lot more, but he doesn't complain about minutes. He's a free agent. He probably will opt out of his $23 million contract next season, become a free agent, and get paid a lot. And he's embraced his role as a minor role player. Like, what he does it more effectively and efficiently than Hassan Whiteside, and he's still going to get paid $20 million per year.
Another guy in that same mold, Clint Capela in Houston. He's on the bench to end games. They'll play PJ Tucker at center to end games a lot of times. Yeah. Like, it's just the way today's league is going.
Yeah.
And if you're the Heat, you want a guy like Olynyk or Bam or even James Johnson playing center for you here and there, especially if you're trying to, drum up some offense late in games, which has been Miami's problem lately. Whiteside, maybe he can get you easy buckets here and there in pick and roll situations, but that slows down the game a lot. And Miami is sometimes at a deficit where they can't get slow points. They've got to get quicker points, which is why they rely on guys like Olynyk and Ellington to shoot threes and stuff like that. So, I think if we're going to spin this positive for Whiteside, though, what in the minutes that he does have, I think, that kinship that he has with Dwayne Wade, as far as, that pick and roll game, that could play a major part of what the Heat are doing in quarters 1 through 3, right?
Yeah.
Where, okay, let's, we're not going to be so reliant on the dribble handoff situation and drumming or just like whipping around the court for 20 minutes or 20 seconds on the shot clock. Let's just do a simple D-Wade 1-5 pick and roll with Whiteside, and let's get some points that way. That could help Miami throughout the course of a game get more easy points. Defensively, just stay engaged, be the dominant defender. We don't need like the triple double block games, but just still being out there and doing the and just being a presence. I mean, I think back to every time the Heat basically play the Milwaukee Bucks, how dominant he can be.
Yeah.
And you'd hope that maybe he could do that against centers that are at his level, which he just, Milwaukee probably has the worst center situation in the league right now. So it's not really saying much, but could Whiteside can he do that against stouter competition? I think when he's out there, he needs to be dominant and not worry about and understand that it's not, like you said, not a reflection on him why he's not out there to end ball games. It's a reflection on where the league is going.
Yeah, I mean it's tough because he hasn't shown that kind of level of self-awareness and maturity at any point throughout his career. And while he's not making these comments publicly or negatively, and it's still a story, I think, look, you have to also understand, you know, this is based on a story that Barry Jackson wrote where he pressed Hassan Whiteside about his playing time. It's not that Whiteside's been bitching publicly about anything. He's not complaining audibly to media or anything like that. And media, by their definition, they're trying to generate a story. They're trying to figure out what it's going on. And there's a lot of fans that feel, hey, he's getting paid $20 million. Why isn't he there in clutch minutes? Well, there's a reason for it. He's not going to be a good fit in the closing minutes of games in today's NBA. And so that's fine. And so, you know,
I think Spoelstra at this point has deserved the trust of the fan base, even though I know he doesn't have it from every fan.
No, not at all.
But like, I think he understands, like, it says a lot when Eric Spoelstra is playing a rookie Bam Adebayo over Whiteside at the end of ball games. Like that is a huge statement in and of itself. Well, that's all we have for today. We'll be back tomorrow with our breakdown of Miami's post-All-Star schedule as we approach the rest of the season. You could send mailbags questions to our email address at lockedonheat@gmail.com. Tweet your questions and comments for our recaps using the hashtag AskOilHeat. Of course, we will get back to our recaps next week as Miami starts playing basketball games. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
Keep sending those reviews.